From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, stories of helping asylum seekers
to welcome the stranger, to feed the hungry. And that's simply what we do, and it might just be a higher calling for many people who will continue to do what their faith tells them to do.
And one Texas death row inmate who could be innocent is closer to being executed, while another Texas death row inmate thought to be innocent is a step closer to being freed. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With the election of Donald Trump as the next president, his promise of mass deportations is coming into focus. Trump has said that he will use the U.S. military to seal the southern border and then to round up and expel anyone who is in the country illegally. What illegal means here seems to be broadly interpreted, not just to include people who snuck across the border and evaded detection and detention, but it could also mean people who are legally pursuing asylum claims or have been granted immigration probation, or those who have TPS, temporary protected status. Altogether, this could include over 20 million people. And some predict that once the practical cost, the actual difficulties, and the negative impacts on the economy of such an operation comes to light, the urgency of this policy will diminish. But polling shows the majority of Americans do support mass deportation because they believe that illegal immigrants are lawbreakers and are a threat to public safety. And we should point out that there are many, many people who do welcome migrants into the country, like members of the San Antonio-based Interfaith Welcome Coalition. For the last 10 years, they have been providing assistance to the refugees after they had been processed by the Border Patrol and then released. The Interfaith Welcome Coalition has compiled a book from the volunteers' experiences called Traveling Mercies, Encounters with Asylum Seekers. It was edited by Mary Grace Kettner.
Well, the book is a collection of stories that were written by volunteers of the Interfaith Welcome Coalition. And they're kind of primarily known for working at the bus station and the airport, where they offer food and travel assistance, help with their tickets, also have backpacks that they give to people with travel supplies, especially at the bus station where people may have a trip of 2 or 3 days ahead of them.
San Antonio was kind of in the middle of this migration flow. People who had crossed had been detained by federal authorities, and then they would release them at the bus station, and these folks had nothing. And then before the Interfaith Welcoming Coalition participating, these people were hanging out at Travis Park. They had no place to go.
That's exactly right. There's sort of two groups of people we see, and that is people being released from detention in the nearby detention centers and people who have come up from the border having been processed by Border Patrol or by ICE, and they have a date to have their hearing in court, and so they have papers with them. And so either way, they have gone through the legal steps they need to go through.
So San Antonio came together, groups of volunteers, to assist these people who were on their way to other parts of the United States. They had their permisos, as you said, their papers, and they just needed a little bit of help. How did this group come together?
It started with Reverend Kelly Allen, who was at the University Presbyterian Church. She died quite suddenly in 2016, but she had already gotten this started. In 2014, when we had a surge of unaccompanied minors in San Antonio that were placed at LAC, she wanted to help them, but the federal government wasn't interested in having volunteers come and help. And so that's when she kind of heard about and learned about the people being released from detention nearby and not having a place to stay and sometimes not being able to communicate their needs and get themselves onto their families or a shelter in another part of the country. we're kind of the southernmost transportation hub, and that's why so many people come through San Antonio. They're coming here so that they can go further by plane or by bus.
The stories in Traveling Mercies, they span a time from 2014 to 2024 in the 10 mm-hmm. years. And it seemed like in that 10 years, there has been a lot of changes, obviously, and we're going through another big change now. With what's happening with mass deportations being promised, is that going to continue, you think?
It's so hard to predict, isn't it? We have had surges in the past. In 2019, for example, we had just hundreds of people a night staying at the Travis Park Church. And our volunteers helped care for them there. And then right now, there's just sort of a trickle coming through the bus station and airport. And when people ask why, I'm never sure how to answer.
Policies were put in place by the administration, cracking down on asylum seekers, also cracking down on people traveling up from Central America. All sorts of things are being done to slow the flow of people. And now we're entering into an even harsher period, so we don't know what the future looks like. So why did you decide to put together this book?
We have, for a long time, we have carried the stories of volunteers in our newsletter, the Interfaith Welcome Coalition newsletter. And this is just kind of an accumulation of those stories. It always surprises me how different each one is.
Can you give us a reading of something you wrote?
I would be delighted to share some stories from the book. Let's see. They're all just very little, short, simple stories. Sometimes they surprise us. Let's see. Here's a couple of stories that I've always wanted to tell to San Antonians. You know, in 2016, some people may remember a cold night in 2016 when a great number of moms and kids were dropped off at the Mennonite church. And this is a story I actually wrote, though it didn't happen to me, from that night. And I've wanted to tell it to San Antonians because our community just came out in mass and brought food and clothes and came by to help with different things. And this story is an example. When the number 7 firemen and the kitchen inspectors arrived to safety check the Mennonite church, they noted that there were not enough bathrooms for so many people, inadequate kitchen facilities, things not up to code or safety standards. City Council member Shirley Gonzalez was there again and queried, "Really? Well, where do you suggest we take them?" The men hedged and left, but later, when their shifts ended, they could be seen walking around the area, guarding the church. And the next day, they returned in plain clothes and joined in serving food, cleaning toilets, showing people how to use the hand sanitizers, and holding babies while moms filled their plates. And that same evening, this happened. A dark truck with huge tires and hunting lights roared into the church parking lot, and Pastor John rushed out to greet the driver, or halt him. The rebel battle flag in the rear window and a stripper silhouette on the back bumper made the pastor feel a bit uneasy. "Is this where all them illegals are?" the driver asked. "May I help you, sir?" Pastor John asked anxiously. "Is this where them illegals are?" he asked again. "How can I help you?" Pastor John repeated, saying his last prayers. "'Cause if it is," the fellow said, "I have all this food for him in the back, and I'll need some help carrying it in." Shall I read another story that you could intersperse?
Let me just ask you about that story.
Okay.
So clearly the twist is that the expectation is that the driver of the truck would be somebody who would be hostile to people who are crossing over and in the country. And that's kind of what we're getting these days. I mean, even now, we're still polling very high people saying that they support Trump's mass deportation plan. Mm-hmm. But once we start recognizing that we're talking about people, children, mothers, the idea that the mass deportation starts to melt away. If we can get away from these political talking points and focus on children and mothers, do you think that would change things?
Well, you know, that is a hope of mine. And it's one of the reasons that I wanted to get some of our stories out. I feel like most people have probably never met an asylum seeker. I feel like that's a rare position we're in to have actually met some people. And the stories that people tell about their encounters are mostly just kind of ordinary. They're ordinary stories about good people, good family, people who do funny things, crazy things, you know. I mean, they're just kind of cover the range of humanity in their interactions with our volunteers.
So you have another story?
I do have another story. Let's see. I'm sorry. I hope this fumbling pages doesn't.
That's all right.
This is another story with a bit of a surprise in it. It's a story by a volunteer whose name is Jan Olson. She says, "One day at the bus station, a mother with two young sons came up to me and asked if I could help her locate her husband. They had been separated shortly after crossing the border, and she had no idea where he was. There's a website that allows you to search by data, including the A number which each refugee has. It is a more complicated process if you don't have the A number, which this mother didn't know. The search yielded no information. I called a phone number listed on the site and was connected with an ICE officer who gave me another phone number, and after multiple phone numbers and much time on hold, I managed to locate her husband in a detention center in Georgia. The officer I spoke with said he couldn't give me any information or arrange a phone call. At that point, I decided that pleading was my only recourse. I described the mother and her sons and the stress and sadness that separation was causing. He said he probably couldn't do anything but keep my phone nearby. About an hour later, and shortly before the family was to board their bus, my phone rang and the officer said, 'I have the husband here.' I ran over to the mother and the sons and handed them my phone. 'It's your husband,' I said. The mother stood with tears streaming down her face, and her sons had their arms wrapped around her, and each one took a turn talking to their father. After the phone call, all three of them came over to me and hugged me all together. It's a moment I will carry with me forever. I think about that ICE officer and how we can encounter acts of kindness in unexpected places." They boarded their bus and continued on their long journey, with many obstacles still ahead of them, but words of love and comfort exchanged with their loved one gave them hope and strength.
So how did you come to put together the book, and how can people find it?
We had been collecting the stories for a while and printing them in our newsletter, but I felt like if people from other places, people not familiar with asylum seekers, if they could only hear their stories, they might see that these are not, you know, the drug dealers and the human traffickers and the escapees from insane asylums and things that they've been alleged to be in some of the common narrative. And so I just started putting them together and thinking about, well, how powerful they are when they're all together. As I would read through a bunch of them at the same time, I would think, these are really powerful stories. So I just kind of decided I would do it and told everybody. It's book is in the name of Interfaith Welcome Coalition, and the IWC receives benefits of the book, I guess you'd say. It's on Amazon. It's under the title Traveling Mercies, and you can find it with my name, Mary Grace Kettner, as well. But if you accidentally get Anne Lamott's book called Traveling Mercies, Some Questions on Faith, You'll like that book too.
Well, I'm sure not everybody is a fan. I mean, it's got to be some pushback that you guys have gotten over the years from doing this kind of work.
So we have. I have never personally gotten it. I don't think it's maybe as common head on, face to face with people at the bus station or airport as it is just out there in the social media and on the TV and maybe other places where we hear people expounding on how what a terrible thing it is and showing their negative attitude toward these people.
Well, we're at a crisis point in America, a point where we have to decide we have decided what kind of country we're going to be. And I'm wondering if there's room for this anymore, any more traveling mercies. Just trying to see if there's hope for continuing this type of work or whether it'll have to be underground.
That's a very good point. There are a number of organizations around the country that are supportive of the whole concept of America, which is a nation of immigrants. And I feel like they are going to continue to strive to do their work. I know the Interfaith Welcome Coalition here will be continuing to strive to do the work that it does, which is the work that we're called to do as communities of faith, to welcome the stranger, to feed the hungry. And that's simply what we do. And it might, you know, it might just be a higher calling for many people who will continue to do what their faith tells them to do. I wonder if I could read one more story.
Yeah, please do.
This is a story written by a volunteer whose name is Moon Sanchez Brand, and she calls her story Ave Maria. Once during a calm moment, my volunteer buddies, Jerry and Clemencia, began singing a Colombian song they knew. It was a lovely sound, and I wanted to join in, but I'd come from a long line of bad, proud, loud singers, so I did what I always do. I howled. Oh! A few rows back, a child started to howl. Oh! And then another, and I thought, yes, they get me. It was so much fun. Then a little boy about 9 or 10 years old came up and said he wanted to sing too. We gladly said yes, and he sang Ave Maria in a very sophisticated, sweet, liquid voice. Everyone listened in awe, even the children. It was as though they were expressing their pride and honor of him. The guard even stopped mid-step to take part in that moment when time stood still in the San Antonio Greyhound bus station. When the young man finished, I went over to his mom to tell her how incredible his singing was. Increíble, I said. She crossed her hands over her heart. She said that in Honduras, he used to sing in the church and he sang around home all the time. But he hadn't sung for 3 months until just now.
Mary Grace Kettner is the editor of Traveling Mercies, Encounters with Asylum Seekers, Stories from the San Antonio Interfaith Welcome Coalition. To add a little more context to the efforts that supported these migrants over the years, pulling something here from our Texas Matters archive, Texas Public Radio editor Yvette Benavides wrote this commentary about her experience in November of 2018 when a surge of migrants arrived in San Antonio.
At the Greyhound bus station in San Antonio, a group of 30 migrants just released from holding cells and detention centers in Dilley and Karnes County waited for their bus transfers to cities all over the country. An impatient toddler pulled on his mother's arm, knocking over the suitcase with a Buzz Lightyear doll hanging off the handle. The boy's novelty t-shirt said, "Ladies, I have arrived." Perhaps that incongruous decal would elicit laughs in another context. Here it was somehow poignant. The mother pulled on the suitcase and shuffled to the next place in another long queue. The boy held Buzz Lightyear's hand and fidgeted in place. Around mid-morning the next day, the Interfaith Welcome Coalition was set up, ready to face throngs of families being released on the border. This week they're seeing twice as many families on any given day. Why now? It's a confusing motive some believe is part of the Trump administration's creation of optics to help generate midterm anxiety for potential Republican voters. Some think the releases will make room for the caravan of migrants coming from Central America. According to a statement from ICE, the releases are part of their efforts to hold to their own imposed limits and laws regarding the number of people they can reasonably accommodate. The only reality for Sister Denise LaRocque, bus station coordinator of the Interfaith Welcome Coalition in San Antonio, is that the families arriving at the bus station need help. The coalition offers snacks and toiletries. They help interpret the English on the bus tickets to the newly arrived about to depart again for parts north. On this day, the team of volunteers sets about to review tickets of those on the latest bus to arrive, all women and children from the detention center in Dilley, Texas. Those with connecting buses leaving immediately are sent to the front of the line, perhaps the only time these families have ever been at the front of any line, literally or figuratively. Those with longer layovers line up in another part of the bus station where volunteers announce that they will be escorted to the Travis Park Methodist Church where they can momentarily escape the cold bus station, the noise and chaos, the unpleasant smells of institutional cleaning product mingled with exhaust and the funkiness of the well-used transit station. Sister Constanza, a new arrival from Mexico herself, tells the group to brace themselves. It will be cold inside the church. She hugs herself and goes, "Brr," the mime meant to show the children what to expect. But when we walk the short hallway and enter the playroom, no one notices anything, distracted instead by the magical ways the children, once quiet and clinging to their mothers, come alive, move away from them, start laughing, talking to each other, pulling toys off the shelves, hugging dolls and teddy bears, building towers of blocks, connecting magnetic train cars together, and making those universal choo-choo sounds for train cars, or room-room for cars, or pshoo-pshoo for tiny rockets. The other volunteers continued the work of translating the information on the bus tickets for the women, but among this particular group of volunteers, only Sister Constanza spoke Spanish and asked for my help to translate. Before I left the playroom, I noticed that all the mothers sat together on the floor, resting their heads against the wall, closing their eyes for a few minutes. Here they were, in another large room to hold them all in. But this time, they were all together, mothers and children. While they wait for the next bus that will carry them to another city, they will eat a real meal. The children will watch a Disney cartoon. The room's not too cold. No one minds that there are no chairs to sit in. There's no crying. There's only the sound of children comforting smiling dolls and chubby bears, pushing trains along invisible tracks, winning all the races, stretching arms up toward the sky, guiding the rockets to infinity and beyond.
Two big developments in death penalty cases that we've been following here on Texas Matters. On Friday, the Texas Supreme Court issued an opinion that Robert Roberson's execution can proceed, and the subpoena issued for Roberson by the Texas House Committee on Criminal Jurisprudence violated the state's separation of powers. That subpoena managed to prevent Roberson from being executed on October 17th, and was issued when serious questions about his actual innocence came to light. Roberson was convicted of the shaken baby death of his 2-year-old daughter, Nikki. New evidence reveals that she likely died from pneumonia and not child abuse. The Texas Supreme Court's ruling does not consider Roberson's guilt or innocence. To proceed with Roberson's execution, a new death warrant will need to be granted, and that could happen almost immediately, or it could take years. There is a 90-day wait period after the death warrant is issued for appeals. We have also been following the death row case of Melissa Lucio. Her case shares similarities with Roberson's. Lucio was found guilty and sentenced to death for the 2007 murder of her daughter, Mariah. Lucio insisted the toddler died from falling down a flight of stairs and not from child abuse. After public outcry, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals issued a stay of execution just 2 days before Lucio was to be put to death. On Thursday, the judge who presided over Lucio's trial, Arturo Nelson, signed a finding of fact and conclusion of law that deemed Lucio, quote, is actually innocent. She did not kill her daughter. I spoke with one of Lucio's attorneys, Vanessa Podkin, director of special litigation at the Innocence Project.
Judge Nelson has signed findings recommending that Melissa Lucio's conviction be vacated on 4 different grounds. Originally, back in 2022, when the Court of Criminal Appeals stayed her execution just 2 days before her execution date, it did so based on 4 legal claims that had been presented to the court. And the Court of Criminal Appeals remanded it to the trial court to consider those claims. You know, in June of this year, Judge Nelson had already signed off on one of the claims. The district attorney's office in Cameron County had agreed that the trial prosecutor at the time of Melissa's trial had withheld favorable evidence that was important to her defense that required her conviction be overturned. And so a recommendation went up to the Court of Criminal Appeals back in June based on the agreement of the prosecutor that her conviction be vacated. And the court wanted to consider the case holistically and sent Ms. Lucio's case back down to the trial court and said, I'd like a ruling, a recommendation on all 4 claims. And that's exactly what happened. Now, with the trial judge finding that there are 4 different legal claims or 4 different reasons why Melissa Lucio's conviction cannot stand.
Lucio's case now goes to the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals for a final decision. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. We've got past episodes at tpr.org. Download and subscribe to Texas Matters wherever you get cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.